you doing? Later on, switch on the TV. They give me a news, they give all truths to me. They give us wise and feed us life.
Uncensored Radio Free America.
Rick Adams is on.
He is. He's made it. He's here. Tuesday night edition of Uncensored Radio Free America. How are you? We're back. Thank God. We are here, and we are with a mission. We are here with a mission to bring you the truth that will set you free. And I can think of no other guest at the moment who can help do that with me than a man who's seen enough of the lies over the years, including about himself, to witness to the truth. And that is author Eustace Mullins. Are you there, Eustace?
I'm here and ready to go.
Oh, boy, where are we going?
Oh, well, you mentioned a mission, and we certainly have a mission in this country.
Oh, we do, don't
you know,
we?
I'm just thinking, despite everything that we've done, The whole world still looks up to this country. It's amazing.
Well, I don't know now. Do they? Or they're sort of looking down at us now with all of the evils that have been done in our name by the government.
In our name, yes.
And those who control the government. I don't know. But anyway, we certainly have a legacy that we can be proud of, for the most part.
Well, a heritage, really.
Yes.
It's our heritage. It's the only heritage we have. It's to bring liberty to the world.
Proclaim liberty.
Yes.
Throughout the world, the land, and to all the inhabitants thereof, right?
Yes. And when this nation was born, no one in the world had ever heard of liberty.
Yeah.
Or even thought about it.
Well, it's true, basically.
Impossible dream.
You look through the history of the world, and you certainly don't find much of a period, of a span of years of true freedom or liberty, do you?
Oh, none at all. It's amazing.
Tyranny was the road that most took. Although in ancient Rome, at the beginning, there was some honor and respect. And
well, the ancient Romans were people of great character. There's no question about it.
Yeah, and the Republic became a democracy, and then right into an empire, and that was the end.
Right into an empire. Well, they slew Caesar because some of the old Romans realized that we could not do this. And so they killed him. But it was too late.
Oh, yeah. Well, they certainly have killed off their leadership. And power corrupts, and absolute power does corrupt absolutely, as the saying goes. And another one, history is repeating itself.
Oh, history is repeating itself. Well, humanity hasn't changed that much, so
no.
It's not really surprising that history is repeating itself.
As the scripture says, there's nothing new under the sun, huh?
Well, that's fairly true.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Eustace, we're going to spend some time tonight again. Thank you. And we're going to invite people to call Eustace Mullins, and we'll do that anytime. You can jump aboard toll-free at 800-313-9443. It's a very simple number, very simple to remember, and we invite your participation because after the break, I've got a lot of questions for Eustace. And also, I want to tell him what others are saying about him. Of course, he's pretty well aware of that, I'm sure. So we'll be back with Uncensored Radio Free America to continue the discussion. Rick Adams, Radio Avenger, a Paul Revere of Talk Radio. Join me. authored many ideas as well. Spent some time in an institution, was fired from the government because he dared to tell the truth. He was an early whistleblower and one of the great students of history who lived through the Depression and through the war years and saw through the lies of all of those things. So, Eustace, I see that some people, of course, have never really taken to you, and some of them include, let's see, Jeffrey Shapiro of the Anti-Defamation League.
Oh, yes, they've been after me for years. They boast that they monitor me 24 hours a day. They monitor me. Everything I do and say is reported right back to them.
Well, I guess so, because it's getting so tough for me to get a hold of you now. And we know that
they are putting the heat on. Well, for 2 years, people have been able to reach me because they put a relay on my phone. And when you dial my number, it goes to New York.
Well, now, let me ask you now, all joking aside about the groups and so forth, surely the phone company can correct this problem, I take it.
Well, I've tried. I even appealed to the FBI counterterrorism agency.
Well, that's like going to the wolf to protect grandmother, isn't it?
Well, we've been fighting for so many years. But, you know, I almost didn't get to make this call today because I was in court this morning and they were going to put me in jail.
Again?
Oh, yeah, this is on the driver's license charge. They're using driving licenses as a fundamental control because they realize that when they take your driver's license, you're under house arrest. You can't leave your house to go out and get food and medical care or anything. Because this is a mountainous town, and you climb up and down these mountains. I walk down to court every morning at 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in court this morning, and I was charged with not having a driver's license. The judge read up the charge, and I said, Your Honor, I have a driver's license. But I was in a nursing home after 9 strokes, and during the period I was in a nursing home, the driving license expired. I said, I have an expired driver's license. Oh, he said, well, if you will go and get your driver's license renewed then, come back and we'll drop the charges. There was no fine, but I was facing a $100 fine.
Mm-hmm.
And my nephew was supposed to come in and take care of the fine if I was fine. And the rule here, you don't leave the jail until your fine is paid. So he never showed up. And if this judge hadn't let me off the charge, I would have been in jail tonight and I wouldn't be able to make your telephone call.
Well, thank goodness for divine intervention.
Yes, it was
there
divine
intervention.
There you go.
The Lord was with you.
Because I thought everything was taken care of. He was going to walk in at the time of my hearing, 9 o'clock this morning, and take care of it. He never showed up.
Some nephew, huh?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Well, you know what they say about family. They're worse than strangers sometimes.
Well, it's very strange. I still have some problems with some of my families, but I've made a rapprochement with some of them.
Well, I think anybody who thinks as we do is going to run into trouble with some family, and I know I'm no exception. I think all of us, when we start talking about things that we talk about, real things, important things, we start, being labeled and being compartmentalized and categorized as kooks and conspiracy guys and nuts. And by the way, that's one of the things that I'm reading about you and what they've said about you over the years. And this Mr. Shapiro, let's see, I think he's an Italian. But anyway, he said in the League of B'nai B'rith personal communication for January 23rd, 1990, he said, quote, "We have long been familiar with the work of Mr. Eustace Mullins, who has had a long career as an anti-Jewish propagandist. In the 50s, Mullins was a contributor to the anti-Semitic publication Common Sense, and he once declared, quote, the United States is a land for Jews in which they can tell lies and loot as they like. Why then do the Jews hate the United States? The Jews hate the United States because Americans do not try to oppress them," unquote. That's what Mr. Shapiro says you said. Now, did you say that?
Oh, no, I said something roughly. I tell you, I didn't say anything about it. I was doing a radio program for Gamaliel Nasser, the premier of Egypt.
Uh-huh.
And he broadcast it all over the Middle East. It was roughly what that is, but it was more elaborate than that. It was more detailed.
Uh-huh.
And so Nasser actually invited me to come to Egypt and live.
Oh, is that right?
And I never got to Egypt yet because he died suddenly of a political heart attack, and that was the end of him.
Well, so how do they get all this stuff about you and put all this together and claim that you've said such and such? How is it they can do that?
Well, they call it the monitoring process, and they listen to and read everything that I say and write, but then it undergoes a sea change when they get their hands on it, because they twist it and take it out of context and make a totally different thing from it than I intended.
Uh-huh.
Because my fundamental premise is the America is a land of liberty,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't leave much room for the ADL because the ADL is totally against it.
Well, I guess we can see that from the subject matter that they have embraced and the kinds of legislation they've proposed and
Absolutely.
Supported.
Absolutely. It's always dictatorial and tyrannical,
yeah.
and it's it's actually a Soviet state is what they want. You know, when
Bolshevism, I think, is the word. Bolshevism.
Bolshevism.
Yeah.
And so, well, it's the first thing that happened after the murder of the Tsar at the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia in 1917.
Uh-huh.
Well, the first law that they passed was a law outlawing anti-Semitism.
I wonder why.
That was the most important thing on their program. And, you know, if you were accused of anti-Semitism in the Soviet Union after 1917, you were killed. There was no trial, no hearing, anything. They just killed you on the spot.
Sounds like we're getting ready for something similar now.
Well, that's their dream state. They still think of Mother Russia as the dream state where they would like to live.
And ironically, if we can believe the reports, there's more anti-Semitism now in Russia than there had been in previous years.
Well, the country has been totally destroyed, that's why. There's hardly anything left.
Wow. All right, our number is 800-313-9443, and let's take some phone calls. Hello, Jane in Baltimore. You're on the program.
Yeah, thanks for having Mr. Mullins on the show.
Sure.
I was going to ask him about some stuff. I read his stuff, Carol Quigley.
Yeah.
Anthony Sutton on Wall Street and the rise of the Nazis.
And the Bolsheviks, yeah.
And the Bolsheviks also. And I have a particular, developed a special interest in the Warburg family and their relationship to the origins of the Federal Reserve in the United States. And because they follow a pattern that's similar to, say, the Rothschilds in the sense of, and I guess this is a prototype in the way Jewish culture adapts to becoming big international bankers, the idea that, like with Rothschild, his idea was to send his sons out so that he could establish the family internationally and therefore they could deal across national boundaries. And one sees this pattern replicated with the Warburgs as well.
Right.
I don't know if Mr. Mullins would consider this a more typical, you know.
Well, didn't you write, Eustis, about the Rothschilds and the control of the American media?
Oh, yes. In fact, I'm in trouble right here in Virginia, my home state, because I keep exposing this state as being run by the Rothschilds. And I'm the only person that has ever made that accusation. And it's absolutely true, because we had a guy named Harry Byrd. He was a senator, and he ran this state for 50 years like a Soviet state.
And he was an independent in Congress, right?
Well, he was an independent, but you see, he was a boy from Martinsburg, West Virginia.
Right, right.
And,
right.
His boyhood friend was Louis L. Strauss. He grew up together at Martinsburg, and Louis L. Strauss became a partner of Kunlo Company and a partner of Paul Warburg and Jacob Schiff, and he backed the Bird machine with unlimited Rothschild money, and they took over this entire state lock, stock, and barrel.
How does Jay Rockefeller fit into that? Do you have a sense
of
how the Rockefellers fit into that?
The Rockefellers were created by the Rothschilds. You see, John D. Rockefeller was a $10 a week clerk, and he became the richest man in the world. Well, he didn't do that without some help. I mean, you don't go from $10 a week to a billionaire overnight. So what he did was he started these oil refineries, and the Rothschild became interested in him. They thought he was a very ruthless man, and so they put the whole Rothschild fortune behind Standard Oil of New Jersey. And they became the biggest monopoly in the world.
Mm.
And Armand Hammer, would he be considered a rival to that, or a competitor, or a partner in that?
Oh, he was always part of the Rockefeller Empire. The Rockefellers did not have any rivals at all.
Mm-hmm. Right. So now they were actually initially invested in Lenin and in the Bolsheviks. Is that
oh,
right?
Yeah. Armand Hammer was Lenin's right-hand man.
Right. Now, I'm concerned in particular with the fact that, now, I believe the first president of the U.S. Federal Reserve was Paul Warburg. Is that correct? Or first or second president?
He was the vice chairman, actually. He wasn't the first president.
Okay.
Of it, but
okay.
He was the chairman. But he was the guy who did it, though. He is generally regarded as the total author of the Federal Reserve Act.
Was he at Jekyll Island with the original founders of the...
He was right there on Jekyll Island. I've had meetings down there in the original Jekyll Island Club where they wrote the Federal Reserve Act of 1910. It was done during Thanksgiving week of 1910 because it was deserted, and they could have the whole island, and that's how they brought a group of people down from New York and wrote the act.
And this was on the secret train. That
secret train. And, they didn't ever use their last names. They called each other the first name.
All right, you want to stay? You have another question,
yeah,
Jane?
Yeah, I wanted to get into the German branch of the
All
town.
Right, good. Well, stay where you are, Jane and Jeff and Lewis and others. We'll be with you as soon as we come back right here on Uncensored Radio Free America. I'm Rick Adams, our guest Eustace Mullins.
Adams is back.
Radio Avenger, the Paul Revere of talk radio.
And we are back with Eustace Mullins, our guest, and right back to the phone, Jane in Baltimore. Jane, you were asking another question. Go ahead.
Yeah, I guess we've referred to Paul Warburg as one of the seminal figures in the founding of the Federal Reserve and that whole era around the time of Woodrow Wilson and so forth. I'm more interested, I suppose, in his brother, Max Warburg, who was, until 1933, the head of the Reichsbank, the largest, most important bank in Germany. And because Warburg, to me, is a figure, he's from kind of a lost memory, a lost history. And that lost memory is precisely how high in German society, in German civilization of the Kaiser's Germany,
mm-hmm.
these very, very prominent, wealthy, powerful Jewish families had risen.
Mm-hmm.
Names like Rafenauer, who was probably the engineering genius that ran the war machine for Germany in World War One, and so mm-hmm. it makes perfect sense, of course, that they would have been the agents deployed by the Kaiser to organize a revolution in Russia and get Russia out of the war so they could free those troops
mm-hmm.
for the Western Front. And we don't need to go into all that. The critical thing I'm interested in here is the role of the Warburg family in the rise to power of the Nazis and National Socialism. And I think your guest probably might have insights on that I can only imagine. I just want to lay the groundwork for asking that question.
Yep. Okay, good.
By recalling that there's a contract
mm-hmm.
that has both Max Warburg and Adolf Hitler's signature on it,
yeah.
Along with the other Jews, Mendelssohn, Wasserman.
Uh-huh.
I think von Hindenburg's signature is on it as well. It's the uh-huh. one that makes Yalmar Schacht head of the Reichsbank. I don't know that we heard one word out of the Warburgs historically about what this meant for the Jews of Germany or Europe or for Europe generally. And it seems that the Warburgs had a rather favorable opinion of the Nazis. And I will pose that mm-hmm. question and one other question, and then I'll depart. The other question is whether these family ties that seem to supersede our illusions about nation states and superpowers, these transnational families that seem to have so much power, whether in fact what they really want to return us to is a kind of feudalism as it exists in their imagination. And with that, I'll sign off, and thanks for a fantastic show.
Well, good. Thank you very much, Jane. Go ahead, Eustace. Tackle those two.
All right. Well, we're told daily that the Nazi political movement was the most horrible development in history, but we're never told that the Nazi movement would never have existed except for two men, Max Warburg and Max Oppenheimer.
Right.
Now, both the Max Warburg Company and the Oppenheimer Company are flourishing in today's Germany as I speak. They're the two most powerful banking companies in Germany. And so these two men, Warburg and Oppenheimer, financed this supposed movement which was going to exterminate the Jewish people. If that were true, that would be very strange. And also, when they tried the Nazi war criminals at the Nuremberg trials, Max Warburg and Max Oppenheimer were never indicted.
Mm-hmm. How interesting, huh? And what about the IG Farbens?
And IG Farben? Well, the IG Farben was backed by the Rothschilds.
Yeah,
the Rothschild
and it's interesting,
company.
Their factories that escaped bombing during the war, huh?
Yes. Well, in fact, the Allied military government was set up in the IG Farben building in Frankfurt, which was the only building that the bombers never touched during World War II.
I know.
It was
it's
the only
amazing,
building still standing.
Somehow these little tidbits never seem to make it into the history columns.
No, well, it tells the whole story. Yeah. I mean, it's like as though somebody has pulled aside the curtain, and you finally see the whole stage right there in front of you.
You know, they've always done this. The what we call the Kenites in the Bible have always managed to divide and conquer.
Absolutely.
And their strategy has always been to set up a dummy and then knock them down under the typical Hegelian dialectic, you see. So what they've done with the Germans, they created one crisis in World War I, drag America into it, making the situation worse, and then out of the ashes of it, there comes more problems that never would have happened had America not entered the war. And then, of course, we had to get dragged into another war. And that, too, was a lie from beginning to end. So, you know, we're seeing it now in historical hindsight. The homework has been done. You know, you read people like Edwin Black, who wrote the book on cooperation of the Nazis with the World Zionists in the transfer agreement.
Oh, yes.
And that book has some 30,000 documents that they had researched proving the ties between the Nazis, Hitler, and the Jewish banking families, as well as the World Zionist Organization. So somehow this is always left out of the history books, and I find that fascinating.
The people in the State of Israel know much more about that than the American people. They're well aware of this story because they've had public trials in Israel after the country was set up, and they tried some of these people on these charges. This was all threshed out in the Israeli parliament. And it was in the newspapers there, but not one word of that ever appeared in the American press.
Well, maybe they couldn't get it over the ocean. They just couldn't wire it over, huh?
Well, they didn't have a good correspondent over there, probably.
Maybe. Maybe they were too preoccupied with other things and scandals.
Well, there was another agenda going. This was in the internal Israeli affairs. So they never bothered with that whatsoever.
That's true of across the board today, reporting is blocked out by the families.
Oh, yes.
About a dozen or so families that control the U.S. media. I hate to say American, we'll say U.S. media. All right, Eustace Mullins, Jeff and Lewis and others will be with you next, I promise, right after this break. I'm Rick Adams, Uncensored Radio Free America.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth. The New World Order thought police are on the run because Rick Adams is back on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Yeah, listen, how do you put a guy like Rick Adams on the air? He's insulting. He's terrible. He's attacking the people that make us happy. He's not one of us. He's not an American. He's nothing but a rabble-rouser.
Well, thank you, and we are back now, rousing the rubble. And indeed, excuse me, speaking of rubble, just got a draft here of air that came in, sucked right in from this pre-wintery weather here in the Northeast. But we're speaking with none other than Eustace Mullins, and we are talking about a variety of issues. Eustace, before we go back to the phone, did you want to mention that, refer to Jane's question about feudal states today, and that's whether that's what we're becoming now in this New World Order?
Well, the New World Order is a completely medieval state. You're taking the world back at least 1,000 years or 1,500 years.
Mm-hmm. In terms of political, economic...
Political, economic, you name it, though. Methods of government, methods of economy, everything is going right back to the Middle Ages.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a very rough time, believe me.
Yeah, and I was there. I ought to know. All right, let's take another call. 800-313-9443. And let's talk to Jeff in Massachusetts. You've been waiting a long time. Hi, Jeff.
Ah, good evening, man. How are you doing?
Good.
Hi. Yes, two questions, Mr. Mullins. Number one, what do you see as the future of America, like, let's say, 25 years into the future? Which is a very important question. And have you ever read the book called Brotherhood of Darkness by Dr. Stanley Monteith?
Oh, I know Dr. Stanley Monteith. I used to do his radio program in California 25 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
What a small world.
Oh, and he's a great guy.
And he's on with RBN now, isn't he?
Yes, I used to stay at his home.
Wow. No, the reason why I throw this out is because Stan Monteith, the way he looks at the world conspiracy is just not Jewish. And even writes in his book, on page 35 of his book, Brotherhood of Darkness, that that there are Catholic and Protestant banking firms as well as Jewish ones. So,
of course.
And the way he describes a conspiracy is philosophical, it's not racial.
Yeah, well, by going racial, you limit yourself, you see, because if you say all international bankers are Jewish, then somebody comes up with a banker who's not Jewish, and then that makes you look like a fool.
But what I'm saying is, in other words, the conspiracy to create a new world order is this. You have evil people at the top that don't want to put us into communist slavery. And that's it, plain and simple, in a nutshell. And Stanley Monteith uses the model of the Orient Express in that book, which is actually a very good primer on the conspiracy. It's very simple. It breaks the conspiracy down into several steps. And he looks at this from several angles. And I like the book. I recommend it. It's a blessing. And what does he take on the future of America?
Well, I'm very confident about the future of America. I have said in my lectures for the last 50 years that America is at the dawn of its history. We have been prevented time and again from taking America's rightful place in history as the beacon light of liberty for the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what we have to continue on that program and keep it going.
Wow. Because I see bad things happening to America, and under communism, the Jews did not fare so well under a communist regime, and neither did they fare so well under the Nazis. And it's just it's kind of a tangent when you try to blame the Zionists for the bad things that are happening in the world.
But it is a tangent if you try to isolate it. None of these things are isolated instances. This is part of a world program, a world agenda. And they work together. They don't work against each other. They work together.
Well, you find in both Nazism and communism the hand of Jewish interest, and yet, as you point out, here they were suffering under the Soviet Union. That is, the true Jews were suffering under the Soviet communist system and under the Nazis. So it doesn't make any difference, really. They create both. And then they find that there are expendables under each system. So,
there was a program last Monday night called The Murder of Stalin.
Oh, yeah?
And that pinpointed it, Beria as the murderer of Stalin. And so Beria, of course, was Jewish herself and was head of the NKVD. And it was so outrageous that the other survivors of the Soviet regime allied together and kicked Beria out, even though he had murdered Stalin.
Mm-hmm. Tweedledee and Tweedledum, huh?
Oh, yes.
All right, Jeff, anything else before we move along?
No, I thank you for taking my call, and it's amazing that you know Mr. Monteith, and do have a very excellent night.
Okay,
well,
thank you.
We've both been around for a long time.
Sure. Thanks for your call, Jeff. Louis Ewing in Washington. Hello.
Hi, how you doing? I wanted to ask, what state is Eustace in?
Eustace is in Virginia.
In Virginia.
Virginia. Mother of presidents.
Right. I heard you talk to me about having a little driving license issue problem. That's my number one thing that I like to deal with. I'd like to send you an email showing that for at least for Oregon, Idaho, Washington, and Utah, North and South Carolina, that the states only sell commercial driver's licenses. And I have a stop arrest notice which shows the criminal code. You can look this up in your state. Driving without a license is not an arrestable offense for which you can be taken into custody in any state.
I was in court this morning on that very charge.
Right. Okay, here's what you do. You look at the criminal code, and it'll list all offenses for which you can be arrested and taken into custody. And it'll list things like drunk driving, domestic violence, assault, hit and run. Okay? And I've got a stop arrest notice with two Washington, an appellate and a Supreme Court case that specifically lays out you can't look to the general criminal code for authority to arrest somebody for a traffic offense. You have to look to the traffic code. So if you look at your arrest without warrant statute in your criminal code and compare it to the arrest statute in the traffic code, you're going to find that in the traffic code, the only authority they have to arrest in the traffic code says that they can stop you for no longer than reasonably necessary, that it takes the issue, the citation, and notice to appear, and that this statute, the traffic arrest statute, provides absolutely no authority to arrest and take somebody into custody. So I'd like to send you some flyers. Do you have an email address?
I don't have an email address, but you can send it to my personal home, which is 126 Madison Place, Stanton, Virginia.
Madison Place, what, Virginia?
Stanton, S-T-A-U-N-T-O-N.
S-A-S-T-A-N-T-U-N?
Yeah, and its zip code is 24401.
No, that's Stanton, isn't it? Stanton?
Yeah, Stanton.
T-O-N.
T-O-N.
Stanton.
And that'll get right to me. That's the only way you can reach here, really.
I'll send you a little package with a bunch of my flyers.
I'd appreciate it, because this driver's, I still got a lot of court fighting to do on this driver's license thing.
Oh, another thing to look up for all the listener audience, in every single state, you can look up the definition of a public highway.
Yeah.
And it says every way, lane, road, place, alley, boulevard, street, open to the vehicular public as a matter of right.
My gosh. Well, I know they've done a lot. People have done some good work on that, but I've been too busy fighting the Federal Reserve to really get into it.
I understand. Rick Adams, can I get your email real quick, too?
Well, you can get it from my producer if you'd like. I don't give it publicly at this time.
Right. Okay, I understand.
But let me ask Eustace. Eustace, do you have any website or is somebody managing a website for you?
Yes, I have a website for the last 2 years. It's EustaceMullins.com.
Right. Okay, because that question came up once before when you were on, and I think I forgot to give it.
Yeah, well, I forgot to give it myself.
Louis, thank you very much.
Thank you, bye-bye.
Thank you, Louis. Bye-bye. All right, 800-313-9443 is the number, and I believe it's Eli or Ellie in Chicago?
Yeah, it's Eli.
Eli, Chicago. Welcome to the program.
Hi, I have a couple of questions, one historical and one current. Let me do the current one first. What does Eustace think of this bird flu vaccine?
Well, I think it's a scare tactic.
Yep.
I mean, they talk about a pandemic. You see, I remember that. I've written about the great swine flu under Gerald Ford, which cost him his reelection.
Okay.
He lost the presidency because he got sucked into the swine flu operation, and they found out it was a hoax, and so he wasn't reelected.
So
he was probably just president.
Yes. Yeah, I remember myself in those days, I warned my mother not to get that vaccine, and several of her friends did, and a couple of them even died after having received that vaccine.
Yeah, some were paralyzed and some died. That's true.
Yeah, and I've been following vaccines ever since, and I'm totally opposed to vaccines. I think they make more people ill.
Oh, I have a whole chapter on that in my book, Murder by Injection.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Fascinating. I haven't got
that book
one.
Was written a number of years ago, too.
It's gone through three printings. It's never been advertised. It's never been reviewed anywhere.
Okay. Now, my historical question is with regard to World War II and the Nazi regime. You probably know as well as anybody that the World Zionist Movement declared economic war against the Nazis in 1933.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but in 1923, the World Zionist Movement went into active partnership with the Nazi Party and Adolf Hitler.
Yes. Well, my question is, did they simply set Hitler up to take a really nasty fall? At what point did the Zionists stop funding the Hitler regime? Because at some point they had to destroy it.
And well, they had to destroy it, but they used the Allies to destroy.
Right.
They were the very movement which they funded.
Uh-huh.
Because all the movement, or all the money for the Nazi movement, came right out of the Rothschilds' pockets.
Right. And
Nazism very seldom had very little support from the German people and from German leaders who really disliked Hitler and were never sympathetic to his operation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, well, I believe had Hitler not gone to war against Russia and had simply taken advantage of all the anti-communists around Eastern Europe, he probably would have succeeded.
Well, he would have succeeded.
Yeah.
He was the master of Europe in 1939,
uh-huh.
And he had come up from 1933 when Germany was devastated. In 6 years, he made Germany the master of Europe.
Right, but do you think the Zionists would have continued to support him as a result? It seems to me they created a monster that they couldn't control. You know, that's what I'm getting at.
Oh, well, that's right. He got out of control, and that's why they brought the whole world in to fight him. That was your Second World War.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, one more question, if possible.
Go ahead.
I've got your book, The History of the Jews, and I don't know how long ago you wrote that one. It's been
1968.
Yeah.
And
I'm a Christian identity advocate.
Uh-huh.
Actually, a Christian identity minister. I have my own congregation in the Chicago area.
I speak on Pastor Pete Peters' radio program a lot.
Oh, okay. Have you changed your opinion at all about the Jews being Hebrews? Because I think when you wrote that book, you made that assumption that the
Jews...
Well,
yes, that was a long time ago. I know a lot more than I know then. I knew then. But I can't say that I've changed, but there's more information coming to light all the time
in
that area.
Yeah, because the books of Ezra and Nehemiah clearly tell us that race mixing is forbidden, and it's real obvious that Jews are race mixers, and that they promote race mixing throughout the world. And so, consequently, they can't be Israelites because they're race mixers. You know, it's very
simple.
The
people in Israel are actually Turco-Edomites. That's their origin. They're not really Hebrews.
Right.
They're Turco-Edomites.
That's an important distinction, yes.
Okay, well, I would totally disagree with you there.
Mm-hmm.
Israelites are, in fact, Hebrews, not Edomites. Edomites stem from the Israelites.
The Edomites and the descendants of Esau today, we call
them
Kenai, these are not true Israelites at all.
That's right, that's right.
In fact, they're opposite. But.
Yeah.
All right,
Eli,
thank you for your call.
Thank you very much.
I hope you'll call again.
Okay.
All right. 800-313-9443. Very interesting. You generated a lot of comments and questions.
I love to hear these questions.
I do too, because sometimes you don't know what to think, what people will be turned on to or not. But you turn them on. All right, let's go back to the phones. Jeff in Texas, you're on the program.
Yeah, hello, Mr. Mullins, a quick question for you. I didn't know you were from old Virginia.
I'm from the very beginning, 1620.
Wow. Well, I went to school right down the road from you at the Virginia Military Institute.
Oh, yes. That's a wonderful school.
VMI, huh?
Yeah. Well,
I went to Washington Lee, which is right across the campus from VMI.
Oh, that's a beautiful school. My question for you, sir, we had to basically sit through the lionization of George C. Marshall when we went through school.
Oh, George Marshall, yes.
How big a player was he in the New World Order? Was he a totally willing accomplice?
He was an accomplice all the way. In fact, Joe McCarthy wrote a book about him. He was the first person to ever write about George Marshall.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And who was he basically reporting to, George C. Marshall? I mean, in this whole effort.
Oh, he reported directly to Franklin D. Roosevelt. You see, George Marshall and Bernard Baruch, who was really running the show, and Franklin D. Roosevelt were sitting in the White House the night before Pearl Harbor, and they were on pins and needles because they were afraid that the Japanese would turn back and would not attack Pearl Harbor.
Have you ever heard of the story of Colonel Pete Ellis, the gentleman who basically mapped out all the Pacific Islands back in the years after World War One?
No, I know a lot of work was done on that.
Yeah,
well, Lee also wrote about that.
Well, he died under mysterious circumstances in 1921 after he had completed
1921.
This document called Advanced Base Operations in Micronesia. And what we were taught in our officer training that he was some far vision, you know, a visionary that could see 20, 30 years off that there was going to be a war in the Pacific, and he basically went out on his own as a field grade officer to sort of map out these islands, which a story that just didn't sit right with me all these years. And now as I've woken up to the reality of this grand scheme, it just seems like he was out there doing the bidding, possibly through General Lejeune, to map all these island landing zones out, and then all of a sudden when his work was done, he just dies.
I'll be darned. No, I don't know the Pete Ellis story at all.
Yeah, his name was Earl Ellis, but his nickname was Pete Ellis, and you can look it up on the web. There was a story about him in the 50s in the Marine Corps Gazette called The Mysterious Death of Colonel Pete Ellis, and I want to get a hold of it and read it, but I can't get the details, so it's just an area of curiosity for me.
Well, I'm going to see what I can find out about that. It's a great story.
Oh, absolutely. Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Jeff from Texas. Yeah. Look that up, and we'll talk about it on the next program, God willing. All right, we're going to take a break in a moment now and be back with more of your calls. Jump aboard. If you can get in now, try it right away before you lose your place. 800-313-9443. I'm Rick Adams, radio avenger, the Paul Revere of Talk Radio. Our guest is Mr. Eustace Mullins. We'll be back.
Why did you?
Why did I what?
Come after me?
I did it to save your life. That doesn't seem to mean much to you or anybody else around here.
Well, sure means a lot to us. We're for the philosophy of life, and they, the Morlocks, are for death. Eustace Mullins, my guest. And Eustace, before I go any further and get into the second hour and more calls, I'd like to put out this little plea to people who are living in that area of Virginia where Eustace lives. Maybe one of you people, it doesn't matter how old you are or really what age you are or what sex, it's just a matter of whether you have time. I think it would be nice if maybe you could help Eustace get a lot of his information and his wealth of knowledge on the Internet and maybe iPod him and get him going. And, Eustace, I don't think you'd be adverse to that suggestion of doing that, would you?
No, I've been waiting for this for years because I am still computer illiterate. I don't know enough to
Well, I understand. I mean, look, myself, it took me a long time to get into this age, and I still don't like it. I'm an analog guy. You know, I'm an old-fashioned guy. I told John Statmiller I'm still using old, if I could anyway, I would use wire recorders from the 1930s, the German technology. I mean, that and tape recorders. Forget about this DVD and MP3 and everything else. I'm just one of those old-fashioned guys myself. I can't help it. But anyway, there's somebody living in that area, and you're in the Stratton area again, right?
Well, right in the Stanton area. Charlottesville is 40 miles west and east of me.
Okay.
And Mount Vernon is about 60 miles north of me.
There you go. So
there's
a lot of...
Of course, is in Monticello and Charlottesville.
Sure, there are a lot of people in that area who listen to us. I know we have a lot of Virginiaites who listen to the program and the network. And one of you out there, maybe two, might be willing to take it upon yourselves to help our good buddy here, Eustace, to put his stuff in digital form and to be able to get the word out and his world of experience, his lifehood of knowledge on the net and accessible to people around the world who are not able to hear him on this program or other programs. That would be very nice. And if someone would do that, we could have you write to him. Perhaps that's the best way, and give him your number, and he will contact you. Is that okay?
I certainly will.
All right. Do that, then. And, again, what is your address, again, Eustace, for them to take down slowly?
It's 126 Madison Place, and it's the town is Stanton, S-T-A-U-N-T-O-N, Stanton, Virginia, 24401.
Okay. Excellent. And, again, as I say, that's the appeal. That's the plea, as it were. Also, when we come back in the second hour, a lot more I want to talk to you about in terms of the Federal Reserve and what it really represents in the Book of Revelation, in the Bible itself, in Daniel. All of these things were actually prophesied thousands of years ago as the end time prophecy concerning the basically the roundup of the four forces that we think of in terms of biblical control. But it's really Babylonian control coming back to the world scene. And they include economics, politics, of course, religion as well. We can't leave that out. So jump aboard right now. We'll take your calls in the second hour with Eustace Mullins, 800-313-9443. And we will be happy to put you right on the program. And I, as I say, we are very happy that we can have Eustace here with us today. Eustace is, 80 what now, Eustace?
I'll soon be 83.
83, so, you know, hey, he's not going to be here forever, and none of us is, so we want to...
I'm working harder than ever, but it's 18 hours already today.
Good for you, brother. The Lord has kept you.
I didn't do, but it worked out that way.
Amen. All right, let's hope so. Let's stay with us. And we'll be right back with Eustace in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
Censored. Radio Free America. Another exciting, informative hour is warming up. Rick Adams is on fire.
Yes, and we are back right here on Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm Rick Adams, and Eustace Mullins is my guest. And Eustace, you mentioned the media in your writings and the Rothschild control over the big metropolitan major media in this country. And there's no doubt about that they have certainly shown a level of corruptness and, unfortunately, dishonesty right from the beginning. In the beginning of the last century, you know, we think of the New York Times and Walter Duranty and Herbert Matthews and all the rest of them. And then it's interesting now that the actor, producer George Clooney, I call him George Looney, has now put out a movie on his hero, Edward R. Murrow, and Murrow's smears on Joe McCarthy. And, of course, probably heard about that. Now it's one of the low-budget art house so-called movies.
CBS is absolutely raving about that movie. It's one of the greatest movies ever made. And, you know, they still hate Joe McCarthy more than anybody.
Oh, absolutely.
Joe is the guy that stopped the march of world communism.
Well, he was the one that exposed them for what they were and exposed more than that, but exposed the Eisenhower, Truman, and other administrations prior to that, Roosevelt included, in preventing, really, the voices of freedom in Europe from prevailing in World War II. It was these people that enslaved Eastern Europe, and it was the Hollywood elite and people there using their own freedom to enslave and destroy the freedom of their brethren behind the Iron Curtain that were so angry that Joe McCarthy exposed them, you know?
Oh, they were so angry that they still referred to him as an evil monster.
Yeah, and of course, you know, he's destroyed millions and billions of careers, you know.
Well, they could never name one. That's very strange. Nobody's ever been able to name.
That's the amazing thing, you know. I heard the report one night on NBC News. Certainly, NBC, the National Baloney Company, and it was Brian Williams that's doing the anchoring, and they just flat out, I mean, said things that were so completely false and untrue. I'm saying, you know, these people have no more self-respect. At least at one time, they pretended to lie with dignity. And they pretended to lie in a refined way, but now they lie blatantly and outrightly. And because they know that really, truthfully, the people know the word is out. People aren't buying the media anymore. They're not buying the newspapers anymore like they used to, and they're turning from the networks because of stuff like this. And Edward R. Murrow was really quite a character in himself. Here was a guy that was a member of the IWW, which was a terrorist organization, a communist front organization, and then he belonged to a number of other organizations that were serving as propaganda masters for the sellout of Asia for the communists in China. And you look at the entire record of people like Murrow and you say, is it incredible? Am I just imagining this? You know, these guys were actually the voices, the sugar-coated voices, as Joe McCarthy would say, of socialism and Marxism.
Oh, yeah, and Paley, who set up CBS,
right.
His father was a cigar manufacturer in Philadelphia.
Right.
And he took the cigar money and started CBS and became almost a monopoly of news in this country.
Mm-hmm. No question about it. No question. And Sarnoff and at NBC and the rest of them and Fred Friendly at CBS, you know, these characters here were characters. There's no question about it. They spoon-fed America syrupy propaganda day after day, night after night, and evening after evening. We come back, we'll talk a little bit about that media dishonesty when we come back with Eustace Mullins and your calls. 800-313-9443. I'm Rick Adams.
The first step in winning the war? Spreading the word. Tell your friends Rick Adams is on RBNLive.com.
And we are back with more discussion with Eustace Mullins. And Eustace, we're talking about Edward R. Murrow and how he certainly distinguished himself as a syrupy mouthpiece for socialism and communism. Of course, his Harvest of Shame documentary was a very classic example of that in the 60s. And, of course, he actually ran a school in behind the Iron Curtain. I don't know if you were aware of it.
In Moscow.
Yeah, in Moscow, a propaganda school. And yet this guy is still put up as a bastion, if you will, of freedom and journalistic integrity. Good Lord, I said, I know the world is corrupt and the whole world lies in darkness, but isn't this a little beyond the pale?
Well, I think this movie is probably not going to attract the audiences that have hoped.
No, it's an art house type of movie.
It's an art house.
Yeah, it's a very low budget film, and it's nothing new under the sun. It's all been done before. But, in fact, the one that NBC produced years ago was Tail Gunner Joe.
Yeah, that
and
was,
that movie
that
was such
really
an abomination. Roy Cohen wrote a complete rebuttal to the whole movie, an answer to it, to Tail Gunner Joe, in his book, which I have. But the thing is that lying has been elevated now to an art form in the modern media as never before. It is so in your face. It is so blatant. It is so obvious and unabashed.
Oh,
that, I'm really ashamed
of
it.
It's shameless.
What's that?
It's shameless.
Well, it's just incredible because what they're really saying is they have such a low opinion of the American public's intelligence, and on that I might not disagree.
True.
Yeah.
Because Joe McCarthy himself was one of the best-liked and most gregarious men on Capitol Hill when I knew him.
Well, yeah, I mean, the American people were with this investigation into what was going on.
Well, of course they were.
The treason of World War II.
New Liberator.
Yeah. But, the media are an elite. We know that.
Well,
we know that those who are in control of the media are an elite, the most elite, and probably the most racist of all. Because of that, they are totally bigoted intellectually in that they do not feel the American people deserve the truth. They feel they have to be governed by this elite bunch of, I guess Spiro Agnew said in Pat Buchanan's words, effete snobs, who spoon-feed us the pablum, which we are supposed to swallow without choking and without spitting it up. So that's no wonder. But, you know, I look at some others, and like Lowell Thomas, I thought was a pretty decent guy. And I don't know if you knew anything about Lowell Thomas. But
I never heard that much about him, but he wound up with an enormous estate north of New York City,
mm-hmm.
and in one of the most extensive areas of New York.
And I had seen his you know, his newsreels, his footage, and generally he was at least objective. And
yes, tried, he seemed to be.
Yeah, he tried to be professional, which is more than you can say about Morrow's and Fred Friendly's and so forth, you know. No question about that. All right, let's go back to the phones. We have a lot of callers. 800-313-9443. Jim in Kansas, you're on the program.
Yes, Eustace. On the back of the dollar bill, pardon my pronunciation, but we have the Latin words, Nunc coeptis novus ordo seclorum. I looked them up in a dictionary, Latin English dictionary, and it says, announcing the birth of the new order of the ages. Now, what are the ages?
Well, that is prehistory and history and the present day all rolled into one.
Well, as I understand it, what I've heard, the ages are something that affects the entire world, and there's been three of them, and they're biblical. Creation, the Great Flood, and the birth of Christ, each being 2,000 years apart.
Hmm.
That's very good.
Now, the Masonic calendar I hear is a 6,000-year calendar. So that accounts for 4,000 years right there. And then another 2,000 years puts us at the year 2000 or close to that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that's the case, there's going to be a new age around the year 2000. But it won't be made by God. It'll be made by Lucifer.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. And the Antichrist.
Now, is that their basic plan?
It looks that way. And they're following it, too.
They're what?
They're following through on it.
Oh, yes. They're very, very close right now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that's the case, sounds like we're in trouble.
Well, it's a very serious time, certainly.
But the age is to be Luciferian. That's why they're fighting Christianity, so on and so forth.
Oh, yes.
And that's why their money system is a reversal of a good, pure money system.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also read enough on the money system through you and others to kind of understand that. And that's what they had to have to take over a country. They had to have control of its money.
Absolutely. Lenin said that in 1917. You got to have a central bank and you got to control the money system.
Yep. And
well, that was the whole basis of Bolshevism right there.
Now, they have converted us from a person to a thing, a resource, right?
Yes, indeed.
And that happened literally overnight.
It did?
Yes, because I dropped a load in New York State and asked them for the restroom, and I found the restroom behind a sign saying Department of Human Resources. I mean, just, and it was hung up there on a piece of cardboard. And from that point on, every place I dropped, every place I loaded, I asked them if they had a personnel department, and they all said the same thing. Now we have a Department of Human Resources. So I looked up on the web, and every country I looked at that spoke English, they all had the same thing. The major corporations had converted to human resources.
Well, I think they're all using that term then.
Well, I tried to find a law on it, and there is no law.
Oh, no, I've never seen a law on it.
Okay, so somebody has enough power in this world to convert all people to things overnight, just like that.
Well, they certainly have. Well, you've done a great work to point that out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the only way it appears to me, and I'm just doing what appears, you know.
Of course.
I don't have any proof of what I'm saying. It's just logic. But I can prove
evidence. Evidence is everything. You can solve any crime with evidence.
Mm-hmm. There you go, and the evidence points that way. Now, why is this? Well, it goes back to the money system, doesn't it? Because
yes.
We are their money. Our future, our pledge of future labor, in other words, when we borrow, is the money.
Certainly.
And no money is created until we pledge labor for it. Is that one of the major reasons why Bush is bringing all the Mexicans in?
I think so, because he is changing the character of the United States people.
Mm-hmm. Because they ran out of money. That is to say, every American was pledged right up to his eyeballs and couldn't borrow anymore. So they extended the time out by giving you a car and nothing paid until next year, so on and so forth, you know? Or giving you a house and you pay only the interest.
But at the same time they're moving people in, what they're doing is moving companies out.
Yes.
You see, Mexico, yes. China, free trade area of the Americas, all of this is intended to reduce the standard and lifestyle of the American people.
And it's working.
It's working perfectly. Yeah, it is. You're right, Jim. And the average person knows there's something wrong, but you know what? They scratch their wooden heads and say, well, if Peter Jennings didn't tell me about it before he died and Brian Williams didn't tell me about it, then I guess everything's okay. We can just assume it's a solvable problem and somebody's in control. Somebody's taking care of it, aren't they?
If they could only understand the simple principles of the money system, they'd understand how it works.
Well, that's the key. The key to destroying a nation has always been financial.
And that's where Eustis really shines.
and that's why Eustis has been attacked largely for his work in money and his exposure
and
of the Federal Reserve.
And out of the whole thing. Because when he asked me to look up the Federal Reserve System, I had never heard of the Federal Reserve System.
This was Ezra Pound, right?
Ezra Pound in 1948.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, is he still in jail or is he out now or what?
I got him released in 1958.
Oh, okay.
And he went back to Italy and he died there in 1972 of a peaceful old age.
I had never heard of that about him.
Yeah. He's been
dead for a long time.
He must have been a brilliant man.
Mm-hmm. He really was. He was born in 1885. So he's a 19th century man.
Yeah.
And he, too, of course, was treated as a demagogue and a scoundrel and a horrible man, by the media.
Oh, he still is. You won't see a good word about Ezra Pound anywhere.
No, except in your writings and others who are honest.
Well, I hail him as a leader and teacher of some of our greatest writers, but nobody else is willing to say anything. But he spent 13 and a half years in an insane asylum without trial and was committed there for life, and I got him out.
I'll be darned.
One congressman did that. One congressman. So there is some hope for the American system.
Yeah, every once in a while I see some hope. But these new laws they're putting through, like on the hate crimes and stuff, that is very...
You just have to just keep on keeping on. You never give up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So back to the money system, Eustis. I discovered that the Federal Reserve note is not a note. It requires four things to be a note, a promise to pay. And you have to have something to pay.
Yes.
And there is nothing to pay in the Federal Reserve. No, it does not represent money or anything valuable.
Well, that's why it was called the Federal Reserve System, but it had no reserves because they didn't need reserves because they printed their own money.
Right.
Actually, they don't print it. They print what we have in our pocket. But we print the money when we borrow.
Yes, that's the creation of money there, borrowing.
When you sign that note...
It's not money. It's paper. It's debt.
Yeah. Well, but
now it's not even paper. It's just, on a ledger. So there's nothing there to begin with. Just an entry.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's my point. Because until you sign the note, there is no money existing for that loan.
Absolutely.
The minute you sign it, that authorizes the banker to create the digits, electronic digits, and put them in your account.
Yes, indeed.
And there is the money created.
Wouldn't you like to have that right?
Well...
Wouldn't you like to have that license to steal?
That's why we are a resource.
There you go.
Because we create their money.
Yes, indeed. Jim, got to run. Thank you for your excellent call. We'll be back with more calls, Doug and others, on Uncensored Radio Free America. Eustis Mullins, our guest.
Get back at 'em with Rick Adams, the Radio Avenger on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
All right, we are back with Eustis Mullins. And Eustis, the scriptures tell us in chapter 13 of Revelation that the time would come when mankind would be in spiritual darkness, so much so that the diabolical individual would be accepted as the world's leader, that man of sin, that Antichrist, as they say. But he will be a substitute for Christ, a counterfeit. Just as a Federal Reserve note is a counterfeit of money, real money, this man of sin will be a poser, of the Christ. He will be accepted as the Messiah, and many, most will follow him to destruction, not realizing he is a false Messiah. So we have a false money system, and we have a false economy that is based on nothing but hot air. Right now, this economy is weaker now than it has ever been in real terms. And yet you've got these so-called genius economists on every talk show, on every TV program, telling us the opposite of the truth. You get every one of them telling us the opposite of the truth. They're telling us continue to binge spend, continue to borrow, continue to buy, shop around, get another credit card. Don't worry about it because we owe it to ourselves. And this is the mindset of the public today that has been brainwashed by these so-called experts, you know?
Yeah, you know, our students at Harvard and Yale don't get a word of true economics. It's really a robbery.
Yeah, it's the theft of the mind.
Yes.
And I want to get into your secrets of the Federal Reserve and other things like JFK's Executive Order 11110. But let's take some calls. And Doug, hi, you're on the program.
I read G. Edward Griffin's books. Creature from Jekyll Island and World Without Cancer. And they are so strikingly similar to Eustace's books.
Well, they're very similar because they are the same thing.
Yeah. Was there a little plagiarism here?
Oh, well, people used to ask me at my meetings, Eustace, what do you think of The Creature from Jekyll Island? And I said, the research in that book is impeccable. I can't find a thing wrong with it.
You know,
that book was commissioned by the John Birch Society because I criticized some of the extreme work that the John Birch Society had done. And they commissioned Griffin to write that book to punish me.
Is that right?
They sold 300,000 copies of it.
Ah, that's incredible. And what were some of the extreme things that the Birch Society had done at the time that you were critical of?
Well, I mentioned in my book, Murder by Injection, that the Birch Society had failed to do most of the things that the prophets was going to do, which is very true. And when I put that in my book, people started calling and writing to me, Birch people. They were very indignant and very angry about this. And so they decided they had to do something with me, and they commissioned Griffin to print this ripoff of my book and to punish me.
Well, the funny thing is, when I had joined the John Birch Society in the 70s, I know that if I went into the bookstore, there were your books. And if they weren't there because of this, they were in the back room. They had another section, you know?
Oh, yes, they did that.
Yeah. I mean, you were still within Birch circles, immensely popular.
Oh, yes, very much so. But at the top, I was never popular.
No, I guess not. And, Doug, go ahead. Do you want to ask another question?
Oh, okay, I was dumb enough to be a little bircher back then, too. We're about the same age and everything, and they've been completely co-opted by our little... It's not the American opinion anymore. It's the new American.
Uh-huh.
And they've been co-opted by our little, I think, Jewish friends or whatever, the Zionists.
Mm-hmm.
But, Mr. Mullins is probably the most educated, eloquent, informed American alive today. And he's probably about 2 or 3 years older than I am. But he has my utmost respect. Utmost respect.
Mm-hmm. I think that goes without saying. He's
sure.
A man of his word, and he has lived through much of this, and we can only reflect on it, because I know from my case, I'm not old enough to go back in that kind of history, but thank goodness for men like Eustace Mullins, who have taught people like me and others the real stories behind the stories and the events.
And people like Eustace Mullins that have been punished, in other words, that man doesn't have I'm sure he's got the spiritual rewards, but he didn't have the financial rewards because he's had people that have plagiarized, not plagiarized, but just copied him.
mm-hmm.
and make big bucks.
Yeah, that's always the way, though. That's always the way. Been that way in many, many forums.
But I'm trying to punish you every way they can when you don't follow the
mm-hmm.
prescribed pattern.
That's right. But you tell the truth. That's the important thing.
Yeah,
you don't want the money. You want the truth. And that's the important thing in life, my friend, right?
I'm sure you used to sleep well at night.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly do.
Well,
right.
That's great.
And that's right.
I appreciate you, sir, and you're fantastic American. God
okay, brother.
You,
and thank you for calling, Doug, again. Appreciate it. All right, we'll be back. Eustace Mullins and your calls and much more ahead. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
And we are back now with Eustace Mullins on Uncensored Radio Free America on RBNLive.com. And Vicki in Idaho, you're next with our guest.
Hi. Yeah, when your previous caller said that we're human resources now, we're not
mm-hmm.
people anymore, he's 100% correct.
Mm-hmm.
When they signed the GATS treaty, they turned us into commodities, you know, to be traded just like TVs and coffee pots and
mm-hmm.
so forth. But then I found a letter that was read into the congressional record from Mark Tucker to Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And what he was describing was a system, a human resources system from cradle to grave. And what he said, and I'll read you a couple quotes. "We think the great opportunity you have is to remold the entire American system for human resources development." That's one. He says, "First, a vision of the kind of national, not federal, human resources development system the nation could have. This is interwoven with a new approach to governing that should inform the vision. What is essential is that we create a seamless web of opportunities to develop one's skills that literally extends from cradle to grave." So what I did is I'm a systems analyst. So I went back and I started looking at the education system, and I traced this back to 1983 to a report called A Nation at Risk.
Yes.
And that's when they started reforming the education system. And what they've done is to build electronic manacles for us. They will be keeping track of everything on children from prenatal to the grave, absolutely everything in their school record, which integrates with the workforce development system, and most recently with Tom Tancredo's bill, actually all three bills that are in Congress right now for the American Jobs Bank. It will integrate with that, and what those bills do is to create a system whereby the labor secretary has total control over the labor market,
mm-hmm.
including prices, supply and demand. It's communist control of our labor market is what it is.
Yeah. It's
so,
total grid control.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're not people. We're not citizens. We're human resources, and we're commodities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the same thing is going on right now in Europe, and Tony Blair was on the news just today again, his new national ID card, pushing that forward as never before, pushing the day ahead, because what they want to do now, they realize that people are getting restless. People are tired of this. People are just tired of being lied to about wars and terror, and on and on and on. So they're saying, we've got to get this thing advanced. We need more terrorism. We need more attacks so we can force more people and eventually the entire population into this system. That's
yeah.
what they're doing openly now.
Yeah, and it started in the Western world, but we're merging with the communist world.
That's the idea, convergence, yeah. They call it, right, Eustace?
Oh, yes, indeed. In fact, the entire program of the national education system was achieved in 1928 when John Dewey and George Constant were sent to Moscow to be trained in the Pavlov conditioned reflex automaton method of education. That is the whole system of education today in the United States. It comes right out of Moscow in 1928.
Incredible but true.
And Edward R. Murrow was a graduate of that same communist school in Moscow.
No wonder.
Yeah. If I had a child in school right now, I'd pull them out so fast. Because not only are they building the record on them, the curriculum is socialization to the communist system of Politburos, I think they call them. Yeah, committees, you know, and they call it
commissars.
remember
commissar of education.
Yeah, remember when we went to school, there were marks for works independently and that kind of thing? Well, now it's works as a group.
Well, everything is groupthink right now, yes.
Team player,
Well, Vicki, thank you very much for your contribution.
Okay, thank
you. Appreciate it, as always. And Mike in Kentucky, you are next on the program. Hi.
A lot of those terms for leaders, I think... In Russia, they call them czars. In Germany, I think they were kaisers.
Yeah.
All of that is derived from Caesar. Supposedly, if you trace the word evolution, and of course, Caesars demanded worship as a god once they were installed, and wanted you to pay them tribute out of the first fruits of your labor, which is directly in competition with what the Bible tells us we're supposed to do to pay a tithe toward the Creator, where all our blessings come from. So
right.
I think in that sense, you're dealing with an antichrist system from going back to... the victory tax of World War II when they first started withholding, demanding the first fruits of your labor.
Mm-hmm.
And all that was supposed to sunset. And, of course, here in Kentucky, our Senate record shows that even though the Secretary of State reported that Kentucky ratified the 16th Amendment, it was not ratified. It was voted down. So there's some serious proof out there that the 16th Amendment and the income tax was not ratified. But you'd mentioned earlier the attempt by Kennedy, Executive Order 11110, to reinstitute United States notes. And you can look that up in some older law dictionaries. And, of course, the earlier caller talked about Federal Reserve notes being the form of currency, which I think even calling it currency is being charitable. But it's in the likeness of a non-interest-bearing promissory note, which there's no way that it's non-interest-bearing since it's all secured by the assets, which is basically the people that are convinced that it is money. I think that's what you're getting at, is that basically we are the surety for it, and that's what they have to do, is to convince everybody that it is lawful for the government to recognize this. And I don't believe, and I'm sure Eustace probably looked at this, but Congress did not have the authority to delegate the money system to a bunch of private banks. Is that, anywhere in the Constitution?
That's the weakness of the whole system. That's the weakness of the whole Federal Reserve system.
Yeah, it's
illegitimate.
It's not constitutional. It's built on fraud. It's piracy.
Yes, absolutely. And I've called it a criminal conspiracy publicly for the last 50 years.
Well, they met in sort of a secret
It was a secret conspiracy.
Cabal on Jekyll Island down there, mm-hmm. Which I don't know if you remember some of those movies. I think from the 70s, I don't know where they got it from, some Catholic writings or whatever, that said the beast would be born of a Jekyll.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's like the movie, I'm trying to remember, it wasn't The Exorcist.
The Omen?
The Omen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Catholic writings or whatever they got that from,
but supposedly the beast was going to be born of a Jekyll or some crap.
And now they're remaking The Omen next year. Guess when it's supposed to be released? June 6th, 2006.
Oh, my God.
Well, you know,
I didn't know they were remaking it.
Yeah, I believe they're redoing it. It's not a sequel.
Well, people,
it's supposed to be remake.
Yeah, it's a remake. People started saying that about, what was it, the London bombings on 7/7 were 333 days away from 6/6/06.
Yeah.
And if you count back another 333 days, it was April 19th, I think, 2004, some such. So, you know, 666 days between those 2 days. And there was supposed to be some terrorist event that was threatened or put forward to happen on that date, but it never occurred.
Right.
And but April 19th, of course, has a lot of significance.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've heard a lot of reasons for Kennedy to have been taken out or done away with. Of course, his pulling out of Vietnam or whatever. But if you look up the definition of United States notes, the blacks and that crowd of school of thought, I think, basically says it's some kind of outmoded form of currency from the Civil War. That's what it makes reference to. And, of course, Lincoln did the same thing. He was, and I'm wondering if you've done research or can point towards some well-footnoted books or something that would back this up, because I'd heard that Lincoln started printing money in the basement of the White House instead of borrowing it, you know,
All right, let...
At 18% interest or something.
Let Eustace respond. Eustace, have you heard any of this?
Well, I've lectured about this for years, you see. When I went to the insane asylum to meet Ezra Pound, one of the first things he told me, I had to learn the difference between interest-bearing currency and non-interest-bearing currency. And, of course, the bankers always have interest-bearing currency.
Oh, yeah.
And when you bring in non-interest-bearing currency, like the greenbacks of Lincoln and John Kennedy, the bankers lose billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to assassinate both of them.
Yep. And, of course, you know, we were supposedly not able to pay back that interest that Lincoln borrowed.
Yes, that's
and,
right.
And the idea was put forward, I think, to try to shuffle the debt around with this Federal Reserve scheme, whatever that would have been 40 years later. But,
well, I used to say that if John Kennedy had been taught any history at Harvard, he would know that Lincoln was assassinated for printing greenbacks, and he wouldn't have done the same thing himself.
Because it was eaten into the real mafia's profits.
Gentlemen, remember that Kennedy attended the London School of Economics.
Oh, yes.
And that was hardly a hard money gold standard school.
Not at all.
So you have to wonder.
Thanks for taking the call.
Thank you, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, 800-313-9443. And there's a lot of theories and speculation about the Kennedy assassination. I don't think any one thing is what it was done for. I think a combination of factors were involved, and certainly a lot of opportunism as a result of it. But for one thing is sure, though, there was a plan to kill Kennedy, and he was assassinated.
Oh, yes.
By elements
within
the U.S.
government. I've been
urged
for many years to write a book about the Kennedy assassination, but there are so many already, and there's so many unresolved things that I just think it's more than I could take on.
Well, it may very well be, but whatever the Lord leads, you'll do. Speaking
well,
of the Lord...
If he decrees it, it's going to happen.
There you go. And speaking of the Lord's will, here is Joe, our Joe from the Church of Philadelphia. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Rick.
Yes.
Hi, Eustace. I'd like to go to the scriptures if I could.
Of course.
Revelation chapter 13. And let's start off along about verse 15.
Mm-hmm.
And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast,
mm-hmm.
that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. You know, starvation's a funny thing, and silver dimes at that time could come in very handy.
Mm-hmm.
They're small in nature and, you know, very... they still carry that pre-64.
Mm-hmm.
They still carry that full silver value. Most people would accept that as a form of payable. And verse 16, and he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand and in their forehead. That's in. It's not on, that's in. What's in your forehead? Your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And this would affect poor and rich. It'd cover the whole spectrum. In other words, if they create a scenario in which the one world global economic system is intentionally brought to its knees so that they can raise up a new system with a new system of money. In the meantime, they could also do a double whammy and tell people that if they accept the mark of the beast, which is also the same mark of Cain in the garden in Genesis, that same mark that Cain took, the mark of protection, and of course this mark of the beast would be a mark of protection for you. If you take the brainwashing in the brain and do the work with your right hand,
mm-hmm.
the work of the system, you'll fit in nicely and nobody will bother you.
And six is the number of Cain, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to go into that a little bit, Rick, if I could.
Yeah.
That no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark, the name of the beast, and the number of the name. In other words, you become part of the system.
Mm-hmm.
Here is wisdom, verse 18. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast. For it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. I have to help you with that in the Strongs. It's 5586. If we go there. And
mm-hmm.
it's 666 is actually Chi X Stigma. They're Greek letters that are actually substitutes for that in a numeric system of
yes.
lettering. And that word stigma, 4742, was left out. Taken out of the Greek alphabet a while back because it was very convicting to the Kenites, sons of Cain. Mm.
Mm.
And it means, that word stigma means 4742 in the Strongs, a mark incised or punched as a scar of service. Much like we would use in a military name, rank, and serial number. But I just wanted to mention that, and I'd like to tie that in with the two witnesses of Revelation 11.
Mm-hmm.
These two witnesses are known as the two olive trees.
Well, stay where you are. We'll come back with that when we return. And our guest again, Eustace Mullins. I'm Rick Adams, and Joe will be back with us to talk about the two witnesses in Revelation. Stay tuned.
By some awful quirk of fate, the Morlocks had become the masters and the Eloi their servants. The Morlocks maintained them and bred them like cattle.
Yes, fellow Eloi, we're back. And Joe from the Church of Philadelphia. Joe, you were just telling us about what's to come in Jerusalem, I believe, the two witnesses that appear
yes,
on the earth.
I'll make it quick. Revelation chapter 11, verse 3. And I will give power unto my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth, 3.5 years. I'm going to skip down to verse 5. And if any man will hurt them, these are the two witnesses, fire proceedeth out of their mouth. Fire is the word of God. Jesus said, my tongue is a consuming fire.
Mm. Yes.
And devoureth their enemies. And if any man will hurt them, he must in this manner be killed. They have a certain power, certain protection by the Father.
Yes.
These have the power to shut heaven, that it rain not in the days of their prophecy, and power over waters to turn them to blood, to smite the earth with its plagues as often as they will. Weather had a big big thing to do with their presence.
Yes, the weather.
Mm-hmm. And when they shall have finished their testimony, the beast that sendeth out of the bottomless pit shall make war against them and shall overcome them and kill them, Father allowing. Of course, people ask me when the last day of this age is. I said, I know exactly when it is. Three and a half days after the two witnesses are killed in the streets of Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly when the end of this age is going to happen.
Yes.
And catch this now. And their dead bodies shall lie in the streets of the great city, which is spiritually called Sodom in Egypt. We know that as Jerusalem, where our Lord was crucified. In Jerusalem, his blood is still there today, shed on the ground. And they of the people and kindreds and tongues of nations shall see their dead bodies 3.5 days, and shall not suffer their dead bodies to be put in graves. And they that dwell upon the earth shall rejoice over them and make merry. The whole world is going to make merry. Because they finally got rid of these two guys.
Right.
And shall send gifts to one to another.
Mm-hmm.
Because these two prophets that tormented them, that dwelt upon the earth. And okay. After 3.5 days, spirit of life from God entered into them.
Mm-hmm.
They stood on their feet.
Right.
And a great fear fell upon them. That's epipeta, because the whole world understood that they had been had.
Yeah, yeah. Joe, thank you for that. And I'm sure Eustace appreciates that history and prophecy as well. Thank you,
Joe.
Yep. And finally, Lewis is back from Washington with a quick word. Lewis, we got about 35, 40 seconds. Come back to the airwaves with us.
Okay, just real quickly, folks, grab your pencils, write this down.
All right.
Title 18, Section 8, defines a Federal Reserve note as an obligation of the United States. That's evidence of debt or credit issued. We cannot pay a debt with a debt. That's what an obligation is.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Title 31, United States Code, Section 3124, says obligations of the United States are not taxable by the states. That's right. You can't pay a traffic ticket because the state can't tax an obligation. And the gold clause in contracts was reinstated in contract in 1982 in the United States Code Section 3151.18.D2 in a case called the Faye Corporation, which is 646 Federal Supplement, page 946, and also 651 Federal Supplement, page 307, and 896 Federal Second 1227. And I've got case law that says the judge's oath to the Constitution is a contract.
All right. Thank you, Lewis, for coming back. And Joe, Eustace Mullins.com is the website. Eustace, thank you again for an exciting, quick 2 hours.
Well, I think it's been a terrific 2 hours.
And we'll do it again in a couple of weeks, God willing.
All right, look
stay healthy. We'll pray for you. Thank you, Eustace Mullins. We've got to get him on more often. We're out of time. Tomorrow night, another great program. Stay with us. Rick Adams, Radio Avenger, Uncensored Radio. Free America goes to bed, God willing, tomorrow night.